WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist with the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW Parkside, and Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Good morning. This is Len Iaquinta for Community Matters, and our topic today is freedom of information. What it is, why it's important to you, and what's going on here in the state of Wisconsin. The guest today that we have with us is Bill Leaders. He's the president of the Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Len.
Now, I want to bring a little background to our listeners. Back at the end of June, on June 30th, the state Senate followed the state assembly in unanimously voting to create a legislative human resources office, a new office that would have built-in secrecy provisions for lawmakers and their staffs. As approved, the bill would have required this new office's records to be treated as confidential, giving the legislature new ways to avoid complying with Wisconsin open records law. The Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council sounded the alarm, and Governor Evers vetoed the bill. Evers said, quote, "The people of Wisconsin have a right to know about misconduct by public officials and employees, including those in the legislature." Evers also said, "I cannot support a bill that would be used to hide official misconduct from public scrutiny." Bill, give us the skinny on this Wisconsin open records snafu and what it all means to us as citizens and to those of us who are journalists.
Sure. Well, the legislature has the power, has the ability to make the laws that apply to everyone in the state, including the legislature. What happened here was that in creating a new human resources office, the legislature, in its wisdom, included language which we felt would almost certainly be used to shield access to records. Already, the state legislature does everything it can to withhold records of accusations of misconduct against lawmakers and their staffs. In fact, on the same day that the state Senate voted in favor of creating the Human Resources Office with these secrecy protections, a judge in Dane County ruled that the legislature's leadership had violated state law by refusing to release information regarding a sexual harassment complaint that had been filed against one of its former members, Stosh Brzezinski, a representative from Green Bay. So the legislature got caught breaking the law, and its response was to try to change the law, to give itself new authority to withhold these records. And so this confidentiality language would be cited as a reason for not releasing the records. Now they try not to release the records anyway, but they have to come up with a balancing test reason. They have to explain why they're not releasing the records and why it would be harmful. If this language were to become part of its constitution, part of state statute, it could simply say, hey, we don't have to give you anything. Our records are confidential. They don't even have to give you a good reason anymore. They just say that the law allows them withhold it, or at least that's what we think would happen and suspect would happen. And the governor agreed with us, and he vetoed this bill that had been unanimously approved by both houses of our state legislature, which happens with very little.
Yes, I was astonished that apparently all the Democrats, as well as all the Republicans, said aye on the voice vote for this bill, and I was appalled by that myself.
It is a fact that Democrats often do share with Republicans a desire for crafting the laws in a way that protects their interest. And so in a number of ways, the state legislature is not subject to the same rules as is everyone else. And we'll talk about some of those.
Yes, You know, it's not too far-fetched to think that legislators might be hiding something or government officials might be hiding something. We've just gone through in this past week this whole series of events that have been reported about Governor, soon-to-be former Governor Cuomo of New York State. And sure. That really makes this topic extremely relevant to us for this program, I think, Bill.
Yeah. Take the case of Josh Kaczynski, the representative from Green Bay. He apparently has a drinking problem. He admits it. There was a situation where he propositioned a legislative aide in a bar, and it was a situation that was reported to authorities in the legislature as sexual harassment. There was a determination made that he had behaved in inappropriate ways, and he was required to get counseling and training and things like that, and he apologized for his behavior. All of that was known because the victim spoke to the press and because a certain amount of information was released, but also a certain amount of information was withheld about how the investigation was conducted, like transcripts, who was talked to, a lot of things were not provided. And so several media organizations, including the Wisconsin State Journal, the Capital Times, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and Wisconsin Associated Press, along with a journalist named Jonathan Anderson, sued the legislature for withholding the information. And that was the decision that was rendered on the same day that the Senate approved the secrecy language. The judge came down and said, you withheld too much, you waited too long, you need to release unredacted records, and you're on the hook for the legal expenses of the newspapers enforcing you to rectify this breaking of the law.
It's really kind of a crazy juxtaposition, isn't it? And I think it's important for our listeners to understand that this applies to matters large and small that get reported on the radio and in your newspapers and on your digital news feeds virtually every week. If you attend to the news carefully, you will often see in response to an open records request, blah, 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 blah.
Sure.
And that's what we're talking about here. What an open records request is and why it's important. And this is access to information that we didn't always have. Isn't that true, Bill? Tell us a little bit about open records, freedom of information, and what this your organization, your president, Bill Leaders, your president of the Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council. Why don't we get into that background?
Sure. Well, Wisconsin has one of the oldest, if not the oldest, open records law on the books. We became a state in 1848, and in 1849, there was a bill that passed and became law, which required public officials to make available for inspection any and all of their records on request. So it's been built into the DNA of the state for a long time, but as things evolve, you know, various issues come up. There's various sticking points always about access. Our modern open records law was written in 1981, updated slightly since then, but essentially the law that we have now for open records and also open meetings, whether you can attend a meeting of a government body, was passed in the early 1980s. And so what my group does is we try to, my group has been around since 1978, since before these laws were passed. What we do is we track the way that the law is being applied by local officials. We track how the law gets changed as a result of litigation. The court cases come down and the court decides you can do this or you can't do that, and it changes the way that things work. And then there are situations where the legislature passes a law which changes tries to change how the records law works, which I think is the example that we spoke of is one of those, that they can pass a law that changes the terrain. They can say these records are confidential. They didn't used to have automatic confidentiality, but now they do.
You know,
so that's what we do. We track the way that the threats and the opportunities for more transparency, and we try to advocate for as much openness as possible, believing, as the law says, that having access to information about the working of government is fundamental to the functioning of a democracy.
The assemblyman, the former assemblyman that you mentioned, said himself, this was an interesting statement, and you know this because it was in a column you wrote not long ago. He said, without having the documents, we had nothing to contradict the claims that were being made. Personally, and as a campaign, we would rather have had more information out. And I think that's just remarkable.
It is remarkable. The legislature, we haven't said this yet, but the legislature does intend to appeal the ruling from the Dane County judge, which said that it had broken the law by withholding information about Stosh Grzynski. And the irony of ironies is that Stosh Grzynski himself would have preferred that all of this information be released much earlier in the process. In fact, he didn't even see the reports that were released to the press until after they were released to the press. He had no access to them. And the rules of the assembly prevented him, I mean, because he didn't have access, they prevented him from sharing them. But when I talked to him, he said, I would have rather that this all been out there rather than people, you know, hearing sexual harassment and imagining X, Y, and Z. I would rather that the records come out and they can see exactly what happened and why I screwed up and why I'm sorry about it and why, you know, what the actuality of the situation was.
In a court case, a defendant would have a right of discovery, but he didn't have anything like that, did he?
Yeah, although they weren't really, that's a good point. They did not, he had a input into the process. He was interviewed for the investigation, but he did not have any access to the records of the investigation that other members of the public did not.
That's just bizarre. Can you tell us a little bit more, President Leaders of the Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council, how the council works as an organization? Do you work directly with journalists? Do you just publish newspaper columns? Tell us a little bit more about your work.
Sure. Well, we do track the way that the open records terrain is affected by litigation and by legislation, and we discuss this at our quarterly meetings. We get together and we talk about all of the things that have happened since our last quarterly meeting, and, you know, talk about what we can do. Sometimes we write a letter, sometimes we write an editorial, sometimes we urge our reporters among us to look into a particular thing, issue, to see if they can do some reporting on whether this is happening and to what extent. So we just try to be vigilant and to keep the issues of open government in the limelight. The other thing that I do in particular, and some of the other officers in the organization do, is we're there for reporters when they have a problem and when they have a question. They contact us and they want us to put into perspective, can they really do this? Can they really withhold it? And sometimes the answer is yes, they can, unfortunately. And sometimes the answer is no, they shouldn't be doing that. And you can quote me saying that. And that's one of the functions we provide, is to be that voice in favor of openness. I'll tell you this, I'm not necessarily the world's greatest expert on the law. I think the lawyers that are affiliated with the council, 201, know more about the law and the case law than I do. My role is to be an advocate for a maximum amount of openness. I don't have to check the law books to tell people that I think that transparency in government is important. I think it's in the best interest of government as well as the people that government represents. It's all around good idea. Try it, you'll like it. You know, it's a way that public officials can build trust with the people whom they represent by saying, we've got nothing to hide. You want to come to our meeting? Come to our meeting. You want to see what went into this legislation? Take a look at the file. You want to see the exchanges that we had when we came up with this idea, which you consider dumb? You know, here they are. Here's our email chain. You can have it on just for the asking. That's the way that things should work, and often it is the way that things do work.
Bill, I think many of us and many of the citizens at large think that this is a law for the benefit of journalists and don't understand that this is a law for the benefit of the public. And it even applies to, you know, Jane, Dick, and Tom, and anybody can request information from governmental units that they think is pertinent and necessary for them to conduct business or to just investigate whether something was done correctly. Isn't that so?
Sure. In fact, the majority of records requesters, the majority of people who send a request to some state or local government agency saying, I like all your records that have to do with this issue or that issue, are not media. They're ordinary citizens, they're advocates for organizations, sometimes they're lawmakers who are looking for dirt on their opponents, often they're businesses. I did an analysis of the open records requests that had been made to the State Department of Administration 8 or 9 years ago, and one of the things that I found striking is that close to a majority of the requests for information from that agency were coming from businesses. They're looking for clients, they're looking for information, they're looking for ways that they can better position themselves in the business world, and so they seek the information that the government has. So no, it's not just for journalists. In fact, journalists have no right to access public information that every other citizen of the state or every other citizen anywhere has in Wisconsin. Our rights are the same as everyone else, with one small area of exception, is that journalists are allowed to see the proceedings of juvenile court hearings, juvenile criminal cases, and they're allowed to look at the files of juvenile cases if they agree not to identify by name the juvenile who is involved. There's that one exception. That's the only place in Wisconsin law where journalists have a right to access to information that is not shared by anybody else.
So open records is everybody's business. Republican, Democrat, citizen, business owner, and writer. It belongs to all of us. It helps us ensure that we have access to information and that stuff isn't going on behind closed doors or in secret email chains. We'll get to that later, that none of the rest of us can find out about.
And importantly, it crosses ideological lines. My organization includes people who are quite conservative. We have worked in the past with the MacIver Institute, which is a conservative think tank, which has access to public information is one of the things that it devotes itself to. The attorney Tom Kamenek, who was a member of our group for a long time, worked with WIL, the Wisconsin Institute of Law and Liberty, which is a very conservative law firm that brings cases for a number of issues, including in pursuit of government transparency. It's something that I think serves everyone and crosses ideological lines and is just plain good for the functioning of our state democracy.
This is Community Matters. I'm Len Iaquinta, and I'm interviewing this morning Bill Leaders, the president of the Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council. Bill, that's fascinating to know, and the statistics you have about who accesses and uses the open records freedom of information laws was very interesting to me and a little surprising, actually. I wonder if we could turn now to some other aspects of this. Earlier in the year, a member of your council wrote about barring lawmakers from destroying records. And I wonder if you'd like to go into that. Apparently, lawmakers have the right to destroy email records, as one example. And I wonder if we should go into that. Several decades ago, lawmakers exempted themselves from the state's record retention statute. What's this all about?
Okay. Well, this is not the open records law, but the way it works is there is a records retention statute that is in place for every local and state official and agency in Wisconsin. If you're a school board, if you're a local streets department, if you're a state agency, you are required to retain the records that you receive for a certain period of time. There's schedules, they vary, but you have to hang on to them.
I had to hang on to everything that I did as a representative of the public when I worked in the public university sector, for example.
Exactly. The legislature doesn't. The legislature has exempted itself from those rules. So if a lawmaker gets an email and says, boy, if really would make me look bad if this came out and the lawmaker can simply delete it. And this has been on the books for a long time. We didn't even realize it was happening until about a decade ago, that this was something that lawmakers were using in. And one of the things that was of concern to us is how much attention do we give it? You don't want to put ideas in their head about, you know, things that they can do if they don't already know it and don't already do it. And unfortunately, I do think the word seeped out that lawmakers are not subject to the retention rules. And I think that today, as a result, there are more state lawmakers who are deleting emails like on a daily basis. At the end of the day, they'll go through and delete the emails that they don't want to keep around. And there are more situations where I think lawmakers are purging their records selectively of certain kinds of input. One of the things that requesters have done with some success in Wisconsin in recent years is a group called We the Irrelevant, which is an activist who sent requests to lawmakers saying, okay, so you voted this way on breaking up the Government Accountability Board. What was the input that you received from constituents? What did people write and urge you to do? And it turned out that like 90 or 95 or 99% of the considerable number of correspondence that a lawmaker received on this was saying, no, don't do it. Bad idea. Please don't. Keep it the way it is. Do not do what you're thinking about doing. And they do it anyway. So now they can go to those communications and get rid of them all. So someone asks for the records that they've received from the public about what they should do on this particular proposal. They can say, I don't have anything. We're not required to keep it.
Now, does that require that requirement with respect with paper records as well as emails?
Yes, all records. There's no retention rule that's in play. Now, if you ask for something, they can't then destroy it. Okay, I should say that. If you make a records request for something and then they decide, oops, I'd rather not give them this, I'm going to destroy it, that's a violation of law. That still could and should not be done. I mean, one way to get around this would be to ask every legislator for their daily emails every day, you know, to make a request and say, I want your daily emails for today. I want your daily emails for today, you say, on the next day. And there, you know, you circumvent their ability to get rid of the ones that they don't want. I don't have that kind of time to do that, but it's a possibility that could be explored.
Well, if anyone else did that, you would accuse them of running a racket.
Yeah, and again, I think it's unfortunate for more than one reason. I think there is some abuse that occurs. Inevitably, there will be abuse. If you have the freedom to hide things, you're going to exercise it in situations where it's not really right to do so. Right? That's just going to happen. But beyond that, I think you blow an opportunity to maintain trust with the people that you represent. I have done stories in which I've gone and I looked at all of the correspondence that a legislator has received in response to a proposal like to toughen drunk driving laws or something that I wrote a story about. So I looked at what Senator Alberta Darling had received by way of input on that. And, you know, by and large, lawmakers are pretty responsible with how they receive information and how they process this and how they go about taking the input they receive into making adjustments to the legislation that they're considering. It's sometimes pretty impressive. I think it's a mistake for them to say, we don't have to give you everything, because the more they give, the better they look.
I think every one of us should ask our state assemblymen and state senators, why did you vote yes this summer? Why did you vote for that new HR office? How dare you? Justify your vote. I would like to hear their answers myself. And the idea that you have to catch someone in the legislature or one of their staff members before they get to the shredder with a piece of paper in order to ask for it is absurd, isn't it?
It is, but, you know, there is no serious momentum toward overturning that. Every session, there's somebody who introduces legislation to deal with it. In the current session, Chris Larson and Jimmy Anderson have introduced a bill that would end the ability of lawmakers to destroy records. It probably is not going to even get a hearing. In fact, it didn't get a hearing so far, so I think that ship has sailed. It's just not something the legislative leadership is interested in doing. They like the ability to hide information at will. They're not going to give it up.
Well, that's very sad, and kudos to those two. I hope they keep getting sent back to the legislature and keep trying.
What I think is going to happen, and I don't want to say I hope it's going to happen because it's not a good thing for the state, but there will be a scandal sometime where it's cast into sharp relief how the ability of lawmakers to destroy records has been used in an abusive, if not, you know, criminal way. And there may be enough backlash when that happens to prompt a change in the rules. But short of that, I don't know. I mean, I encourage my members, I encourage your audience, you know, ask your legislator if they will support getting rid of their ability to destroy records and push them on that and ask them and make them answer it publicly and, you know, keep up the pressure. And maybe we can get enough momentum on that issue to get rid of that that ability.
Well, Mr. Leers, I certainly agree with you. I think transparency is important. And just think of some of the issues we've had in this state in the past year. Just take Foxconn, for example. The deal it made with the University of Wisconsin, which I found as a professional fundraiser exceptionally suspect at the time. I had very serious doubts that that was going to actually happen, and it never did. All these buildings that they built for PR purposes or bought in for PR purposes in communities to say we were going to have an innovation center here and there, you knew that that was public relations. I would love to have seen the correspondence and the conversations and the documents that went on with respect to that, because it was to a journalist like you and me, I think it was just obvious what was going on there. And it looked to me like vote buying. I'll just be honest and say what I think. I think that this stuff is really very, very important for the public. And it's just as important at the local level. What were the conversations in Kenosha and Racine with respect to Foxconn's development? And if people wanted information about what was discussed and what deals were proposed, how much of that could we actually find out? I don't know.
We should be able to get it all. I mean, the rule of the road in the state of Wisconsin is that if a document exists and it's in the possession of a state or local government official, it is presumptively open to the public and should be provided on request. So anyone can ask for that, and the then falls to the authority itself to either provide the record or come up with a legally defensible reason why it is not providing records. Sometimes they can do that. They can say, you know, this is an active investigation, and to release the information now, we compromise it, so you can't have it now. Or sometimes they say there are competitive and bargaining reasons that this information cannot be provided. But they have to come up with a reason. They just can't ignore your request.
They just can't say no. They should have to have at least a credible reason for denying it. Absolutely true. Now, I'd like to switch the road we're traveling on now and go into the idea of email and how email, private email accounts, can and do get used by public officials to skirt the law. And why don't we go into that? One of your colleagues on the council wrote a column about that just last month, Bill.
Mm-hmm. That's Tom Kamenek, who I mentioned before. He started a private law firm called the Wisconsin Transparency Project, which is just him as a sole practitioner. But he exclusively gets involved in open records and open meetings litigation. That's his entire business as a private attorney, is to get involved in transparency issues. And he wrote a column which just noted that it's problematic that the status quo allows government officials to conduct government business on their personal private email accounts. In fact, I don't know if this is still true, but some years ago when I looked into it, there were some county officials in smaller counties that didn't even have an official government email address. They all used their personal email addresses, you know. But understand, all of the communications that are that concern government business are public information, whether you do it on your own email account or whether you do it on a government account. It shouldn't matter. If you are using your personal private email account to conduct government business and someone asks for the records that you have regarding the issue that this is about, you have to turn it over. The law says it doesn't matter where it's kept, but still it's much more difficult to police a system that involves private email addresses than it is one that involves, you know, a public system that's maintained by a public authority. You basically are leaving it up to the individual person to check their email and provide what they decide is responsive or tell you that nothing is responsive. It's all comes down to needing to trust them. And like Tom says, well, you know, I don't really trust you. It's not appropriate for you to insist on a status quo that requires that when you say something, I need to trust you. I don't. And so he proposes that you just knock it off. You make it a rule that public officials cannot conduct official business on their personal account. Someone sends them a note saying, hey, I want to talk to you about this bill. They says, sorry, I can't deal with that here. You have to contact me on my official address. They should not be going using their personal accounts to have substantive discussions about their government business. So, you know, as Tom says, it's one of the few issues that he can think of where there's a very easy, simple, cheap solution is just don't do it anymore. Tell them they can't do it anymore, and they won't. And that would be, that's a problem that has an easy solution, and he suggested, and I hope there's momentum toward that as well.
It's interesting that it's well established and understood by the public and pretty well understood by public officials that you can't use your government email account for your campaign, right?
Right, you can't. The campaign communications are all separate.
And yet when it comes to the official conduct of public business, they're very happy to use their private email accounts to hide things from the public. And I think it's worth noting here that I don't know a single person who doesn't have multiple email accounts. Some of them use their names. Some of them use nonsense in order to disguise who they are. They use burner accounts to get rid of junk mail. Let's face it, the easiest thing in the world to do is to use private email to keep public business secret from the public.
Yeah, it's, you know, I don't know that there's always a malicious intent. And I think, as I said, the law does require that you provide these records if they are requested. Many public officials do, but it's just not appropriate and it should be prohibited. It's just not conducive to building trust to say you have to trust this guy that the emails that he provided in response to your request are sufficient and that he's not hiding something. We shouldn't have to trust them.
Yeah, and Tom made the observation that without central administration, like you'd get with a government email account, things disappear. Different email providers have different retention requests. Finding stuff is not so easy in some email accounts if someone wanted to go back and look for them.
So my deleted emails disappear after 30 days. You know, that wouldn't be true for a government system, I don't believe.
And once a public official leaves government service, they're supposed to turn over all their records, Tom says, to their successor. But with personal emails, I can imagine, as he says, that practically never happens.
Yeah, that's another problem with it. Again, the good news is there's an easy solution. Tell them to knock it off.
Just knock it off. Use your government account for everything. And if someone sends something to your private account, forward it or reply all and reply to your government account and tell them that future emails on this topic have to be through my government account. And that way you've put yourself in the clear if you care to, right? Sure. Easy as pie.
As a reporter, I sometimes reached out to political candidates, say, hey, where can I talk to you about the election, and they've come back at me and said, you can't ask me that on my government account. You have to go to my campaign account. So I know they're capable of doing that. They're capable of pushing back if they want.
Yes, I've had the same experience many times, and they have no problem making that distinction when it comes to that particular purpose, because they can get into real trouble, right? Now, there was an interesting case earlier this year that snared the University of Wisconsin-Madison Chancellor Rebecca Blank, because she was using a private email portal that the presidents and chancellors of the 14 university members of what's still called the Big Ten were trying to plan stuff about COVID-19 responses. Do you want to get into that? And there was a very interesting thing that there was a quote found from one of her emails, apparently, where the chancellor of Madison's campus said, quote, "I would be delighted to share information, but perhaps we can do this through the Big Ten portal, which will assure confidentiality." Well, what the heck's going on here, Rebecca? What about this, Bill?
Well, Rebecca Blank did apologize. The Washington Post did a story in which it quoted the statement that you just read, where they were having communications among the chancellors of Big Ten universities about when the football season would resume and under what conditions, which is an issue of intense public interest. And the chancellor of the UW, Rebecca Blank, said, you know, why don't we take this conversation to the Big Ten portal so that it's confidential? She shouldn't have done that. It doesn't make it exempt from the records law that she uses private portal. She was wrong to try to duck transparency by turning to this source, but it's not the only time that this has happened. There's organizations like ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, which works with legislators, and it has a portal that keeps information secret that involves communications from lawmakers. Lawmakers write it, and they ask about this idea or that idea that this think tank called ALEC has, and these communications are not part of the official stream of correspondence with those government officials. They're this separate private portal. So that's another casual abuse of the process, is to have these discussions off to the side.
And the attorneys general, I imagine, the Republican attorneys general, I know, have a similar portal. I don't know about the Democratic attorneys general. Do you want to tell us what you know about that?
Yeah, the columnist with the Center for Media and Democracy, who wrote this column, David Armniak, did say that there is a Republican governor's portal that is used for the same reason, to avoid having discussions on official systems that are more readily subject to open records requests. Again, I think it's tragic for more than one reason. I think it's tragic that the government officials can hide it, but also I think it's tragic that they do hide it, because it deprives them a potential input. I mean, I don't know anyone who thinks that the Big Ten handled the return to football in a perfect way. They started up again. They weren't prepared. Games had to be canceled after season started. It was a mess. Who knows? Maybe if this had been done more in the open, they would have got better advice, or they would have presented them the thought of certain contingencies. Because they knew people were looking over their shoulder, they might have done a better job of it if it had been more open. So it's just tragic. Plus, it's tragic that the public has the sense of that the government officials are trying to hide things from them. I don't think they need to hide things from them. Most of the time, they should show people what they're doing. It's really not that terrible most of the time. If you get to see the way the sausage is made, I'm against that aphorism about how you shouldn't want to see that. I think most of the time, they're behaving pretty well. Well, why do they need to hide it?
It does. It encourages distrust in government. And I don't let the chancellor, Chancellor Blank, off very, very easily, because, you know, her comment, "which will assure confidentiality," shows that she was aware of her guilt in that she was doing something wrong. And in my judgment, I know it's just my point of view, but if I can't imagine what they could have been discussing that would have been so necessary to keep confidential. That just baffles me. I would love to know. Maybe she'll tell us someday. But she should know better. And she's old enough to know better. She's an educated person. And her excuse doesn't cut it with Lenny Quinta, I'll tell you that. Now, there's another scam that I find myself very exercised about. And I know some of your members do, too. And a lot of private citizens find this when they need a piece of information. They get slammed with record location fees. What's the record location fee all about, and why does the government make us pay for getting the information that it generates based on the taxes I've already paid?
Yes. When the open records law was current incarnation of the open records law was passed in 1981, there was a provision that was put into it which said, you know, custodians can charge requesters for the actual necessary and direct cost of providing copies. They can charge them for the cost of mailing those copies to them, and it can charge for the actual necessary and direct cost of locating records if the cost of locating records is more than $50. So most requests are not going to take $50 of staff time to locate, and so that charge is just not imposed. But if it is more than $50, they are allowed to impose it. This has not been adjusted for inflation since the law was passed in 1981. I think the last I checked, $50 then was about $140 now. So it really should be updated. In fact, the governor, Governor Evers, in his budget earlier this year, proposed raising the location fee threshold to $100. Nothing came of that. The Republicans stripped it out of the budget bill immediately. But that would be a good idea to raise that threshold. Beyond the fact that the threshold is lower than it should be, I think it is used inappropriately. I think there are too many situations where a records custodian gets a request for all these records and they don't really want to deal with it. And so they come back and say, oh, this is going to take so much work. We're going to have to spend 15 hours at least of staff time to fulfill your request. So, you know, you're going to have to send us a check for $800 before we start. That's what we have to pay for our staff cost in order to process the request. So you send us that check and we'll find those records for you. That happens all the time. Where records custodians will either interpret a request as broadly as possible, or they'll overinterpret a request somewhat abusively. What I often hear when I hear from requesters on this is, how could it possibly take so long? You know, on my computer, I can search for emails on a given subject, you know, in a matter of seconds. They're telling me it's going to take 8 hours at $40 an hour. You know, how can it possibly take them so long? Why are their records so disorganized that it's going to take them 8 hours to find records in response to a request? I had one recently from a reporter. They were trying to find where the money that had come from COVID-19 stimulus, what it was spent on by schools. Schools got a certain amount of money from that package, that relief package. And the newspaper wanted to know, where did it go? What was it spent on? What did the school district spend the money that they received on? And they got one of these request packets that said, oh, it's going to take X number of hours. It's going to cost you, I think it was $200 or $300. I think the newspaper may have ended up paying it in this particular case. But again, it's like, does it really take you that long to find that? What if the superintendent asked to see a list of the beneficiaries of the COVID-19 funds? Would it really take them 8 hours of staff time to find it for him? I mean, do they not have their records in a better order and easier to access than that? So
we use fund accounting in the public sector. With fund accounting, it should be able to be done just like that.
Just like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I've even offered at times to go into a requester's office and say, well, let me look at your computer. I can do it in 10 minutes. of course, they don't allow that, but, you know, I'm very skeptical of many of these demands for large amounts of money. The way to deal with it is just, you know, to try to seek accommodation. What the custodian is doing when they come back and say it's going to cost a boatload of money because it's going to take a boatload of time is they're interpreting the request very broadly. And sometimes the requester can come back and say, hey, isn't there something I can do that will make this quicker and easier and cheaper? And then you can do that and you can get it for less or for nothing.